Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Basketball is back and better than ever. The NBA regular season tips off tomorrow night, and joining us now to preview all of it is the commissioner of the NBA. Our friend Adam Silver is back with us on Mike and Mike. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. That's a tall task if I'm supposed to cheer you up, but good morning.
Did you see the call in that game yesterday? You're there in New York. Please, did you see the call in that Jet game?
I did see the call in that Jet game. You know, it's interesting. In the NBA, our standard is clear and conclusive to overturn a call. So as a fan, I didn't quite understand it.
Thank you. I've got the commissioner of other sports on my side on this thing.
Unfortunately, he doesn't get to say this.
All I said is I didn't understand it. I'm sure there's a very logical explanation from the league office.
Well said. All right, I got you in trouble before we even started. So then let's get to the really good news to begin with. Last season, it was a great year in many ways for the NBA, but one of the major problems that many people complained about, myself included, was the resting of a lot of superstars. So you have made some adjustments this year, and I know you've had a lot of conversations with your teams about that. What is your expectation relative to how different it might look this coming regular season with stars playing in the highest profile games and other games beyond those as well?
You know, let me just begin by saying it wasn't quite the epidemic of resting that some people made it out to be last year. I mean, for example, Steph Curry rest once, Russell Westbrook rest once, Harden never rested, and LeBron at 32 years old, rested for five games, but this is unbelievable. He already has more minutes in his career than Michael Jordan did when he retired at 40. Mm-hmm. But having said all that, we don't want to see healthy players resting, especially for marquee games, and especially when they're only in a city once when they're on the road. So what we did was we created a new set of rules where, number one, players, for the most part, should not be resting when they're healthy. We recognize it's going to occur sometimes. So when it does occur, teams shouldn't be resting multiple starters at once. They shouldn't be resting during marquee national broadcast. And that's essentially what happened last year. We had two Saturday night games on ABC where we had multiple starters resting. And on top of that, we had some fairly dramatic changes in how we go about the schedule. We added a full week to the regular schedule. We did a better job locking dates and buildings out so that when, you know, we just have more choice so that we have priority over concerts and other events and buildings. So at the end of the day, we were able to completely eliminate four games out of five nights and dramatically reduce back-to-back. So it's my expectation that the problem will largely have taken care of itself.
Well, let me just say, I completely agree with you that it was overblown, and I kept saying that. It's the guy to the right of me that kept losing his mind on it. So I am in complete agreement with you on that. That being said, with the new set of rules out there and you with the ability to fine teams if you don't like kind of what's going on, are you in a position where you would have to drop the hammer quickly and early on that to kind of set a precedent if you don't like what you see?
Honestly, I hope not. I now have that tool available to me, and that is to fine $100,000 or potentially more if a team violates our policy. But I've met with the coaches. I met with the general managers. We had an owners meeting 2 weeks ago. I think everyone understands that we have to balance issues in this league, that at the end of the day, we wouldn't be where we are without our fans. Our broadcasters are critically important. And at the same time, we don't want players to get injured. And, you know, the good news also that we hardly talk about is virtually all of our top players were healthy in the playoffs last year. Obviously, we had that injury to Kawhi, but I don't think that was an overuse injury. And so, again, you see it in all sports. It's nothing new that players get rested, but it's a long season. It's causing us also to take a fresh look at the length of the season as well. The interesting thing is, and it often surprises people, we don't have more injuries as the season goes on. it's not as if there are more injuries in March and April than there are in November and December. Where the correlation comes is when players are fatigued. That's why we've made a lot of changes in the schedule for this year.
Yes, and we love it. I mean, we absolutely love the changes that were made. So that was one issue, and that would be the resting. The other one was the tanking, which I know that you have begun the process of addressing with some of the changes that you made in the draft lottery. And some people may say, oh, it's not enough. My perspective on it was it is at least a step in the right direction. What is your expectation relative to that? What was the intention going in, and where do you think potentially you could see it going?
There were two issues, and one is whether there was too great an incentive to be at the very bottom of the league. So under the current draft rules, which, by the way, remain in place for this season, it doesn't change till next year, The team with the worst record had a 25% chance of getting the first pick, and then the team with the second worst record had a 20%, and the third worst record had a 15% chance. So what we've done is we've now, beginning next season, changed the odds so that the team with the worst record has a 14% pick, the team with the second worst record has a 14% pick, the team with the third worst record has a 14% chance. So hopefully it'll accomplish two things. One is it doesn't create the same incentive to race to the bottom by moving over 10 percentage points in terms of likelihood of getting that pick. But in addition, I think even more concerning to me was the jockeying near the end of the season to move from third worst to second worst to the absolute worst, because it was statistically significant to move from one slot to another. So it's, as you guys said, it's far from perfect. At the end of the day, the purpose of the draft, of course, is to help the worst teams restock with the best players. So, and we've experimented a lot with this over the years, and certainly we're not ready to give up on the draft, so we'll see how our teams respond to this change.
Certainly, you like to see how anything works out. My issue with the commissioner was that a team that had the fifth worst record may not tank because they couldn't get all the way to the bottom of the worst to get the best shot for number one. My thought was, now if the top three get at least an even shot for number one, you may get the fifth worst team or the sixth worst team to tank it just to be the third worst team and get even with the other teams to get that top lottery pick. So that was my only concern about that. Was that, what was the thought process about the possibility of that happening?
You know, we looked at it. We think there's not a statistically significant enough difference between being in the middle of the pack and then moving to the very worst part of the draft to incentivize teams to do that. But I'll say one thing in this business. I mean, this is the fifth time we've changed the draft lottery, and there are always unintended consequences. And the teams are super sophisticated. They are deep into analytics. They figure out things that we didn't necessarily anticipate. So it's one of the reasons everything in this league seems to be an experiment of one sort or another. I think you got to make changes, but we have other ideas in the drawer that we continue to look at, but so we'll see how our teams respond to this.
Mike and Mike, Adam Silver is with us again. NBA season tips off tomorrow night with a couple of really interesting matchups, including the Celtics and Cavaliers, Rockets and Warriors, so it should be another great year for the NBA. One of your owners now, and the greatest legend maybe in the history of your sport, is Michael Jordan, and he voiced some concern that others have about quote-unquote super teams in your sport, saying it's going to hurt the overall aspect of the league from a competitive standpoint. People still look at Golden State as such an incredibly prohibitive favorite. Where do we stand as far as you're concerned on super teams and that concept?
Well, I'll just begin with Michael's comments. Yeah. And I chuckled a little bit, because this notion that maybe the most competitive athlete in the history of all sports is frustrated, maybe a little bit, that his team isn't predicted to win the championship this year. So I take it with a bit of a grain of salt. And also, here's a guy who in his last six full seasons as a Chicago Bull won the championship. So at the time, of course, everyone defined that Bulls team as a super team. But so I think there's a recognition that in this sport, that with combinations of certain players, they're going to be superior. And to me, as I said towards the end of last season, we should celebrate excellence. I mean, before we talk about breaking up a truly great team, especially one that was formed largely through the draft, I get it. Durant came as a free agent, but when you have Steph as the seventh pick, Clay is the 11th. Draymond is the 35th pick. Steve Kerr doing an incredible job. Bob Myers is the GM. To me, it raises the bar for all teams in the league, and it's something that rather than teams sitting around and saying, well, we can't possibly compete against the Golden State Warriors, you'd like to think that the collection of the very best players in the world on the 29 other teams would just have that team in their sights. But having said all that, Michael also happens to be chairman of our Labor Relations Committee. And, you know, it's just like changes in the draft lottery. We're always looking at the system and trying to find ways to create the best possible competition. And talk about unanticipated impact of rule changes. You know, several years ago, within a soft cap system, the salary cap system we have, we added a hard cap for individual players. Mm-hmm. So my sense is once we added the hard cap for an individual player and they couldn't essentially make more by moving teams or staying with their team, they can around the edges, but for the most part they can't. As you might expect, winning becomes paramount. If I know I'm going to make, even though it's a fortune of money, that's I'm capped in terms of how much I'm going to make, of course their desire is to win. And so I think an economist would have predicted that would mean that those great players would tend to congregate together because they truly do want to win championships. And whether over time we need to make adjustments in our system, we'll look. But having said that, you know, Michael's other line was there, in essence, only two great teams. I'm still trying to figure out who that second team is. You know, was he referring to Houston, OKC, Cleveland maybe, Boston? What do you guys
think?
San
Antonio? I think he was referring to OKC. I think he was referring to OKC only because they added Paul George and Carmelo kind of late in the going, but Houston added Chris Paul. No, look, what you have is you have a bunch of GMs who are doing exactly what you're saying. Rather than sitting back and doing nothing, I read Daryl Morey, an interview that he did where he said, look, our job, whether we can catch Golden State or not, our job is to try and to get as good as we possibly can. So that's what most of those teams are doing.
Right.
Mike and Mike Adams.
Yeah, I just say, you know,
go ahead.
It's funny, you know, you guys are saying Houston, OKC. It's amazing. So he's leaving out Cleveland. I mean, we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing the game.
Maybe it will be Cleveland. Mike and Mike, two quick things I wanted to get in because I've seen interesting comments made about them recently. One of them, you yourself said, and you kind of alluded to it at the very beginning of this conversation, that you and the league are not married to an 82-game schedule. Can you expand on that thought a little bit?
What I said was it's been in place for 50 years, but there's nothing magical about it. There was no special formula, at least looking back in terms of our records as to why we play an 82-game season. And I only say we're learning more about players' bodies. We're learning more about the impact of fatigue. We just added a full week to the regular season without adding more games to create more space between games. And at the same time, putting aside player health, we have to continue to look as an entertainment property what the competitive landscape looks like. And we know that it's a very long regular season. It's interesting. 10 years ago, people were predicting in the industry that fans would no longer want to buy 41-game, you know, season ticket packages. It's fascinating. I don't know if it's because StubHub's done a good job. The secondary market is so robust. Actually, season ticket sales are at an all-time high, I think, because people have an easier time moving those tickets or they can email them to friends and other things. I'd say in terms of the length of the season, it may be – I'm always looking at international soccer to see how they do things differently. They have mid-season tournaments, for example. I mean, one concept we've discussed is maybe shortening the regular season, but around All-Star – maybe not even having an All-Star game, instead of having a tournament at that time of year, a tournament that teams care about, where it's something else to win. I mean, another thing that a lot of the great GMs in this league always point out to me, and especially those ones who study international soccer, they have multiple cups that you can win, and they're all significant. In the NBA, you play an entire season for the Larry O'Brien Trophy, but it may be that some sort of midseason tournament could also become important, and the fans could get behind it. And those changes don't take place, you know, quickly. I think it's something that we continue to look at, but that's really what I meant. I just think it's there's no magic behind 82 games, and we're in the league office and working with our GMs and our competition committee. We're continuing to look at other ways to present the competition.
Really interesting. Mike and Mike, Adam Silver is with us. One other thing that I thought of here is that there's been all of this turmoil in college basketball right now, and we have heard from a lot of high-profile college coaches who have sung your praises, by the way. Coach K in particular said that no one has tried to help the circumstance from the NBA over historically more than you have tried to do from your role as commissioner. But it will bring up again what we know as the one-and-done rule in college basketball, and many people have speculated that maybe we could see the end of that coming up soon. What are your thoughts on what would for you be an age restriction and whether you could see any change in that in the foreseeable future?
Well, you know, I think, as you guys know, we can't change the minimum age in this league without negotiating with the union. So it's a function of collective bargaining. But what's really interesting to me is that the last two number one picks in the NBA draft, Ben Simmons 2 years ago and Markelle Fultz last year, both played for teams that did not make the NCAA tournament. Mm. And I think not enough people are talking about that. That seems to be a sea change in sort of in the development of players coming into the NBA. And I think it's become common knowledge now that these so-called one-and-done players are, maybe understandably, almost entirely focused on where they're going to go in the draft lottery. Not to say they don't badly care about winning, but the stakes are so high in terms of their place in the draft lottery. The stakes are so high in terms of the amount of money they can make over a long NBA career as a star player that, you know, that's sort of front and center what they're focused on as college players. I think, and we had a huge increase in the number of one and done players that came out last year. We over the years we've had roughly about an average of 8. Last year we had 16 players came out as one and done players. So I think something has to change. You know, as I've said before, it's clearly not working for the college game. You know, the top college coaches have said that several times. I think from our standpoint, if the players in that 1 year of college aren't getting the kind of development we'd like to see them get coming into the NBA, aren't playing in the NCAA tournament, aren't competing against top-notch competition, I think we have to take a step back and figure out whether we're better off taking those players at a younger age and working on their training and development full time. I will say, you know, our development league that now has become our G League this year, we're up to 26 teams that have corresponding NBA parent teams. We have two-way contracts for the first time this year, which means that you're going to have, in addition to the NBA roster, two players on G League rosters who can come up a certain amount of days to the NBA team, who can make roughly $250,000 a year playing in the G League. Of course, the issue for the top college kids is whether they should be paid. I think it may be the case that at this point, given the amount of money that is generated by their performances, that we as the NBA have to take a serious look at paying them and paying them much better than players currently receive in the G League. So those are all things we're looking at. It's clear a change will come. It's something Michelle Roberts, the head of our union, I've already started talking to her about it. I mean, these changes don't have to wait till you finish a collective bargaining cycle. Even though we're in a new collective bargaining agreement, we've told them, Chris Paul's the president of their union, Michael Jordan's the head of our committee, that we should down even this season and start talking about what a different framework would look like.
Lastly, Steph Curry said he wasn't going to go to the White House. We saw the president's response on inviting the entire team. We've seen the president's response to the NFL and the players that are protesting during the national anthem. The owners and the union are actually going to meet in the NFL, which I think is a good thing coming up starting tomorrow. You have seemed to have a great relationship with Michelle Roberts and the union. What are those conversations been about players and social activism? I know you have a rule of no kneeling during the anthem. Where is your line of where you will get on the player for things that they are doing and what they are able to do? What has those discussions been?
Well, let me just begin by saying we've had a rule requiring players to stand for the anthem that has been in place as far back as I can find it in our rules. I mean, going back beyond certainly 3 decades. And as you know, none of our players chose to take a knee during the season last year. I think there are a lot of differences between NBA players and NFL players. Number one, our season is much longer, and we play a lot more games. And so with an average of about 3.5 games a week, our players have this megaphone out to the public through the media that NFL players may not otherwise have. They do media before and after every game, so that's approximately 3 times a week. They have huge social media. They have a huge social media presence. And also because they don't perform in helmets and they're two-way players, they're better, more recognizable to the public. And so they have a forum that maybe NFL players don't have. I'd say the discussions we've been having with our union have focused more on action as opposed to protest. Not to say that there isn't, of course, an important role for protest in society, but we've said the issues are very well known at this point, and certainly the NFL players have attracted a lot of attention to the issue of social injustice. So we said, what is it we can be doing about these issues? And, for example, last year we worked with our union to create programs in all 30 team communities where police officers and young people, especially young people of color, were coming together with NBA players in private forums, no media present, just to listen to each other. I mean, to me, one of the core issues here, now going to the real substantive problem in society, is that there isn't sufficient trust in these communities between law enforcement and these young people. And so those are the things that we're very focused on with our teams right now.
Well done. Listen, Commissioner, we wish you the very best as you get a new season started. We always so appreciate your time and your candor, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great opening night, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That's Adam Silver, Commissioner of the NBA.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.